When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
In the middle of 2024, I set up a form on my website at jdrozd.com/AMA, as in Ask Me Anything, where I was inviting people to share any thoughts, questions, wonderings they had in and around my making of this book, The Inscrutable Dr. Bear and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue. And I had a alert set up anytime somebody would send in a thought, question, or wondering. And I didn't get any alerts for a long time, thinking, well, people must not be very curious about it, only to log in today and realize that there are entries that were submitted a year ago that I didn't know about because my alert software failed me. So apologies for the delay in getting to some of these questions that have been adding up in the jdrozd.com/AMA form. And let me take on one that I think is very top of mind for me, given that I'm heading into the end of the summer. It is August 2025, closing in on the year anniversary of the release of the book. And I've been doing a few book events between going to things like the American Library Association annual conference, some school visits, but also some book festivals and, events where I'm selling the book. And someone asks, how do you feel about the modern expectation of artists being entertainers? In parentheses, YouTube, TikTok, Reels, Twitch, etc. How do I feel that expectation has affected my comics? That is, I feel like this is a question that kind of comes up a lot when I'm traveling in circles of whether I'm with teaching artists or I'm with fellow authors at events. Everybody's talking about this in one form or another, and I will start with the headline and then I will offer the context as to what my take is. Everybody's got their own take on this thing. And my take is I'm not putting a lot of urgency or energy to being an entertainer to promote my work. What I am thinking about is how I can offer presence around my work. Now, don't misunderstand me. I am not trying to do one of those reframes that is going to get you to sign up for my 12-part workshop series, mailing list, etc. I am not trying to put this in anybody else's pocket. I am offering this only as my perspective on my particular experience of promoting my particular book. I want the book to succeed. I want it to make me money. It has not made me money yet. It has sold pretty okay, but I haven't done what's called earning out, where I haven't sold enough that it has paid for the advance and other promotional costs that went into making the book. So it's not making me money yet. I would like it to, but let me offer this context as I move forward, and I will elaborate on some of my quote-unquote hot take around this. Is one, I have a day job, which is doing comics residencies in public schools, libraries, and with other hosting organizations. And that has two major outcomes that affect the way I think about my marketing. One, let's say there's two major, one minor. So here's the major ones first. One, it's covering most of my bills. Like almost all of my living costs, at least my share of the living costs. I do have a partner, and we share the burden of home ownership and all the other bills together. My part of it is being covered by my day job, so that diminishes the urgency on whether or not the book makes me money. Again, I would like it to, but my day job's pretty great. I have very few complaints. It's not like when I was a blackjack dealer. I hated doing that. I really like working with kids. But here's the second big consequence of this day job. And this might sound like I'm about to contradict myself. I do love working with kids, but it is emotionally expensive work. my mentor taught me back in 2007 when I started working as a teaching artist. She said something along the lines of, if you're not exhausted, you haven't done your work. And from my experience, that is true. The kind of presence that I offer in my classroom really asks a lot of me. And that might be because I have some elements of introversion in my personality. I know that I need quiet time to not be talking to people in order to feel recharged. I know that going out with friends does take a toll on me over time, and I have to, you know, like often, like if I work like a summer camp, like I just finished a summer camp where I was working a full 8 hours with kids, the whole 8 hours, half hour for lunch, but then the half hour for lunch was with the other teachers. I needed a nap after that. It was just a lot of holding attention, really thoughtful attention for a lot of people. So, and then the third consequence is that, well, I'm working with the people who I want to read the book. Now, one might think, well, gosh, you got a captive audience. There's all these kids who are going to be buying your book because you're working with hundreds of kids a year. Well, I would say 2% of the kids actually wind up reading the book. You know, they enjoy making stuff with me. They enjoy making comics and drawing with me, but that doesn't mean they necessarily want to read my book. They like me. They enjoy my presence, but it doesn't mean that doesn't translate to sales necessarily. So that was the minor consequence of all this. But anyway, but I mean, it's worth understanding that my day job actually has a very direct connection to my work as a cartoonist as well. And I'm grateful for it, and I know it's a privilege. But that second consequence I talked about being so tired when I get out of work means that I am not excited, or let me say, I don't have a ton of energy left over to do any other outward-facing expression, meaning doing TikTok, doing YouTube, doing live streaming. It's like very low on my list. When I get home, what I want to do is I want to shut my door to my studio and just be locked in that quiet, imaginal space of making things. Whether it's making things out of clay, whether it's making comics, just being in the quiet space where I don't have to do that kind of attention holding that I do in the classroom all the time. I know that some of my friends listen to these microcasts, and I know you've heard me complain about this, about how like even showing up for my friendships has been harder since I've been working so much as a teaching artist, because so much of my energy goes into being there for those kids. Now, part of my headline was talking about how I'm thinking about presence. So if I'm going to switch the frame on this from being an entertainer to offering presence, what do I mean? This is one of the things I've been reflecting on after a full 2 summers of book promotion, is while I'm not excited or energetic about doing the sort of performance of getting people, the performance to get people interested in my book, what I do find that I have the energy for and the enthusiasm for is creating spaces where individual presence and connection can happen. And the problem is that it's not obvious to me how that's scalable. Let me see what I mean. So when I went to ALA, the American Library Association conference, I did this speed dating event where they had, I don't know, like 15 tables with like 11 librarians at each table, and then 15 authors would bounce from table to table. We had 8 minutes to tell the table about our book and why they should buy it. And what I did as my way to flip the script on it, or rather to make it more fun for me, that's how I'm always thinking about this. Like, I don't like the idea of doing 15 pitches. As charming as I think I can be, I'm at the risk of being immodest, I know I can be charming, but that sounded like a slog, 15 8-minute pitches. So I printed a postcard with the Dr. Bear cover on it. And on the back of the postcard were two sections. One was from the case files of Dr. Bear, and it had a little area to draw something. And then on the right was an area to write something. Underneath was like information about the book. Here's the ISBN number. Here's where to order it online, etc. And what I did at each table is I said, I want somebody here to tell me, I'm going to make a custom cursed object for somebody at this table. I'm going to make a cursed object just for you. And what I need you to tell me is, tell me about an object in your home that if your house was on fire, you would run in to save this thing. Not that you should, but that you would. And then I would say, and also give me either a spooky or silly story that happened to you in your life. And somebody would raise their hand and they would volunteer. And while they were telling me this information, I would draw on the card a custom cursed object, and I would write a little biography of the cursed object. So I'd merge the ideas of like, okay, your beloved object is some kind of stuffed animal in your house. Your story is about the time you thought you saw a ghost in the apartment above the garage in your parents' house, that kind of thing. Merge those two ideas. Now, the idea here is I'm doing a magic trick in front of them, right? I'm showing the creative process in a way that isn't didactic. It's performance. But while I'm also drawing, I get to talk about the book. I'm creating something for them to watch while I'm talking about how these ideas tie into how Dr. Bear is about a guy who has to learn how to listen to people and find out their stories so that he can heal these cursed objects, right? So there's that. And then also, now I have this artifact that is just between me and this person that they're going to keep, whether or not they buy the book, right? So that was my way to make this like more palatable to me, more authentic to me. And yes, it had marketing stuff going on there, but it was something that was also offering a presence and a connection more so than an entertainment. Again, I'll take one step back. I know I can be charming. I don't know if I can be entertaining. I wouldn't use that word for me. I think I have a good sense of humor, but I think that makes me a good audience. It doesn't make me a good comedian, if that makes sense. So at the book festivals that I've been going to this year in 2025, I've been doing the same kind of thing. And my presence there has really been informed by the fact that I'm just so tired from doing these art residencies that I don't have the strength or emotional calories to do the outward-facing sort of, hey, how you doing? Good to see you here. Hey, I like your shirt. Do you like comics? You want to talk about comics with me? I'm not doing that kind of engagement when I'm at these events. What I'm doing is I'm sitting there and I'm sketching, I'm doodling. I think I'm presenting a cheerful presence, but not a extroverted presence. And when people would come to the table and see the cover of the book and start to look at it, then I could engage and say like, hey, well, you know, before I even tell you about the book, I'm doing custom cursed objects, or I'll draw you as an animal adventurer. It's up to you. If you want to sit and draw with me for a minute, we can do that. And I would do that. And this is correlation, not causation, but at these festivals, I've noticed that I'm selling more books than I have in past years. Historically, I have never broken even at a comic convention, festival, etc. But these last couple, I think I at least broke even or made like maybe like $100. Which, I mean, if you really break it down, it's like, okay, well, you just did like 15 hours of presence at a convention to make $100 after all expenses are covered. Is it really worth it? I don't know. That's another discussion to have with my business manager part of my personality. But from the perspective of historically speaking, wow, I'm doing pretty good. And some of the other people at this one of the festivals I went to actually said to me, like, oh my gosh, I've been watching what's happening at your table. It just feels like there's something electric over here. One person said, like, I'm getting a master's course on salesmanship charisma, which I felt a lot of revulsion toward initially. I was like, don't diminish what I'm doing here with marketing talk. You know, I'm creating moments of human connection. Like, for instance, one person actually said when I was doing a cursed object for them, they said, are you collecting all these stories for potential future Dr. Bear books? And I said, you know, it didn't even occur to me. I am just enjoying the experience of learning about my fellow human beings and learning about these quirky things that stick in our brains and we bring to these meetings of tell me a silly or spooky story. What is a spooky thing that stuck with you? And what is a thing that is in your home that you absolutely adore and why, right? But sure, yeah, it could be field research. Never thought about that. I was more hooked on the idea of just learning about people. So I initially felt a little bit of a pushback on that. Like, don't put that stink on my stuff. But to be fair to them, yes, absolutely. It's a marketing move. Because by creating this moment of connection, I'm creating a space of safety, a space of earnestness, where they can consider buying the book. And to be honest, a lot of the people who connected with the experience of having a custom cursed object were sort of predisposed to like that idea, which made them more interested in the book. So I think I moved a lot of books at the last festival I did because of that, certainly. Let me also say, there were lots of people who, when I said, would you like me to draw a custom cursed object with you? They'd say no, and that's okay too. So I feel like, I guess let me explain what the bias that I am working from here is. When people talk about like, well, just start a YouTube to promote your book, I don't think most people are suggesting that you just start a YouTube and it's as simple as that. I mean, there's also that whole idea of figuring out like, what is your presence? What do you have to say? What's the storytelling you want to do around your book? And when I listen to people giving advice around this, it really feels to me like they're saying, how can you position yourself as an expert on this? So in other words, like, well, Jersey, your book's about, like, has themes of object and cultural repatriation. How can you position yourself as an authority to speak out against, museums acquiring objects and taking them from their homelands? I want to explore that to my work. I don't want to become an advocate in that realm. There's other people who are much more informed, educated, and more fiercely determined to do it. I see myself as the person just to raise the question with readers in an unexpected way. So start a YouTube channel, sure, to what end, and how to do it. That's the big part of the puzzle. And I don't feel a lot of urgency to explore that right now. So again, I have a YouTube channel. I've been doing lots of different kinds of live streaming things over the years. And I experimented with doing the custom cursed object live streams where I would have people anonymously submit them through a form. I would do the drawing performance on a live stream and interact with people live while it's happening. And while I think it was fun, I think the attempt to scale up the connection felt incompatible for me. And so again, it's like the moment I turned it into performance, like primarily performance, I didn't enjoy it as much, and it felt somehow, like I said, incongruous in some way. And as I've been thinking about this idea of like, what was I offering at these festivals and these promotional events? I was offering presence. And like the kind of presence I offer in the classroom, where when a student shows me their work, I don't just say, that's great, and then move on. Or I say, I like that you did the details, or I like that your perspective is good here. I'm going to comment on a technical aspect of the work and high five you and move on. This is mine. I'm not trying to put this in anybody else's pocket, but this is why I'm exhausted when I teach, is that I'll sit down with the kid and say, well, tell me why you did this instead of that. What is that thing in the background there? Why did you make it look like that? Tell me more about that. I want them to tell me in their words what they were going through when they went through this experience of making this thing. I'm not there to congratulate them on whether or not they are technically proficient. I'm there to help them reflect on the experience they went through when they created something. That's what's important to me. That's mine. I'm not trying to make it yours. It's mine. So when I'm thinking about how do I think about TikTok, Reels, Twitch, etc.? I'm thinking about how do I bring that to that? And how do I bring that to that, to those spaces in a way that one, feels authentic, two, doesn't ask for too much of my energy because I'm already low. I'm already running at a deficit here. So that's why I haven't been doing much live streaming as of right now. And I haven't done like TikTok. I can't figure out how to do that in a way that is compatible with what I find interesting and valuable right now. I'm not trying to tell anybody to not use TikTok. I don't care. Enjoy it. I'm just saying that, like, for me right now, that's not where I'm at. And I can't, if I figure out a way to do like authentic presence and connection through TikTok, yeah, I'll be all over it. But right now I can't. Like, the model that makes that, like, and again, no urgency here for me, but the model that makes the most sense for me right now is doing something that's more private. Like, maybe it's something where it's like people sign up and I do like a 40-minute Zoom session where I do custom cursed objects individually in a Zoom session. That's not scalable. That's not going to move thousands of books, but it does what I think is interesting. Again, I'm not in any kind of, there's no fire under me to do it right now, but it's as I'm in my little moments of driving to residencies where I have time to think about this, that's the kind of stuff I'm thinking about. And then to finally answer, like, how is it affecting my comics? I'll point once again to what Tony Cliff is doing with his comics, because Tony Cliff, a couple years ago, started doing his new Delilah Dirk book, and he posted a blog series explaining what his rationale and approach were for doing it the way he's doing it. And I found it absolutely stirring, because he was really pointing out all of the frictions that come out of the assumptions built into the traditional approaches to publishing books, web comics, and et cetera. The idea that you have to do it on this schedule at this rate, and you have to accept that the returns are only going to be such and such unless you are one of the lucky 2% who actually make a hit. And he said, look, I want to make the art I want to make. I want to make it in the way I want to make it, to the quality that I want to make it. But here are the things I'm up against. I only have this much time. And I have done the, I'm completely paraphrasing Tony's blog series at not having read it in a year. But so, you know, I might be mischaracterizing it. But what I got out of it was, is that, look, I've only got so much time and I have this kind of quality that I want to achieve. I've done the racing to make the deadline to meet a publishing schedule according to the model that has existed before I came along, and it hasn't given me the return that I need to make this sustainable. So, F sustainability, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. And like I said, I found that stirring for him to say, like, nope, I'm just going to pursue the model that I want to pursue. And if it doesn't make it a big success, at least I'm making the art that I'm enjoying making. So how has this stuff affected my comics? I would say that making The Inscrutable Dr. Bear and The Case of the Two-Faced Statue made me, and Tony's blog, helped me to dislodge myself from that whole network of assumptions. And again, I want to acknowledge loudly that I am privileged in the sense that I have a day job that I actually like that pays me pretty good. So I don't have to make the book work for me that way. And again, I would like to, but it's not an immediate need. So that's coloring my approach to this. For sure. And that's another reason I want to be very clear, is that I'm not putting this in anybody else's pocket. But what I am offering this as is just another, here's like one person's view of it as people look at their own way of viewing it. I don't want to make a multi-part workshop series where you have to subscribe to my newsletter that is linked in a vertical video where I'm showing you the three things you need to know in order to be marketable, because I don't know. But what I do know is that for me, the only times where I really feel like I'm alive and I've completed the circle on the work that I've done is when I'm looking at another human in the eye and we're connecting one-to-one on the ideas that are expressed through the work. And sometimes that adds up to sales. But you know, talk to your parents, because they're probably going to tell you, don't listen to this guy. He's got all the bad ideas that don't go into an MBA, right? Like, I know, like, I'm very aware that, like, when the way I think about things and my approach to things does make me, because I know this because I work in schools and I encounter parents all the time. I know that the things that I care about make me a effing weirdo in the traditional capitalist model of how to be a good working professional. I know that that when some parents look at me, they're going, oh, this guy is going to die alone and poor. And it could very well be. That's probably, I would even say that's probably likely. But right now, at this stage of my life, with it being conceptually a distant idea, I think it's okay, because, like, again, like, the richness that I look for is in those moments where we both look at each other and say, like, oh my gosh, we're humans, and aren't humans cool? Yeah, that's it'd be neat if that was scalable. But yeah, I would say another part of this, another piece of the puzzle that's important to understand is that as I'm coming at it, I'm just tired. I'm really tired because my work asks so much of me. And so it's, I feel like the idea of checking in on online platforms, let me clarify this real quick. I like doing my mailing list once or twice a month. I like checking in on the Patreon and the Discord, but the idea of going and interacting on other public platforms, just, if I got the time, I'll do it. But even then, I'm just like, I'm bipping in and bipping out. I don't have any time to, like, position myself as an entertainer. I don't have the energy. I don't have the emotional calories to set up the phone for a vertical video. And those of you who do, I'm genuinely impressed. I'm really impressed of what you're doing, because it's after being around, if you're being in a classroom of 30 kids for 6 hours a day and holding that presence, I can't summon that right now. Maybe that'll change this year, depending on my schedule. I don't know. And who knows, like 6 months from now, I might be doing a whole bunch of vertical videos with my face in there saying, like, hey, here's the thing I care about. But right now, all I'm thinking about is, like, how can I create spaces where we can look at each other and there can be, like, a kind of a sacred presence going on, which sounds so woo. But you know what? If we're going to talk about brands, I guess that's part of my brand. Blah. I've been going on long enough. All right. Thank you for submitting this thought, question, and wondering. A year ago, it was August of 2024 when this came in, and I was not notified, and I apologize for the delay. I'm going to be checking the form from now on, because the automated feature is not working for me. So that's at jdros.com/AMA if you want to provide any thoughts, questions, wonderings to prompt me to do more of these microcasts. And I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
As we've just seen, Skeletor went back into the past to make evil things happen. In reality, no one can go back into the past. That's only make-believe. But we can try to learn from the past, from things that have happened to us, and try to apply them toward being better people today. Remember, it's today that counts. So make it the best day possible. Until next time, this is He-Man wishing you good health and good luck.